And welcome to the show. I'm Mike Indest, your host, and with me today is Matt Crossland, Dr. Matt Crossland, founder of the Down the Line magazine. Matt, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, this is great. And before we got on the air, we were just talking that we were having a, I guess, every other year Down the Line semi-staff meeting, maybe, and that didn't happen this past year, so...
Yeah, sad. The conference that I usually go to in New Orleans got moved to Nashville, and just wasn't as fun.
Yeah, well, and the weather, I don't know what it's like in Nashville. I'm sure it's nice, too, but it's unseasonably nice here. But I won't rub that in. I think the problem with New Orleans is it's Jazz Fest, so I think it might have been difficult to get you know, reasonably priced hotel rooms and all that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So maybe next year. We'll see how it
goes. Well, this conference will do the same place 2 years in a row. So they did a New Orleans 2 years in a row. They did Nashville this year, but they're not. They're trying to get out of doing Nashville because a lot of people couldn't come to Nashville because they lived in states that had put Tennessee on a travel ban list.
Oh, for what
heard
reason?
About those or not? Because of either bathroom equality access for people that are transgender, or how they treat LGBT, you know, QA community or whatever. California has banned their state employees from traveling to places like Tennessee and Texas, and other few other states have followed their lead. So,
I didn't know that. I knew there were some things going on in North Carolina, but I didn't know there was other things happening out there.
Yeah, North Carolina's probably on that list too. I mean, it's you know, it's like, you know, 10 states on the list. So. There are a lot of people that are usually there, too, that weren't there. So it's kind of like it was very different this year. But anyway.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. I'll have to go go check that out. I try to stay away from I'm not on social media, and I try to stay away from the news from our country. So I've watched the news, just not from... Not from our country, but a lot of times those things will be covered. So I'm surprised I haven't heard any of that. But anyway, we are going to do another episode on spiritual abuse. And I guess if you've been a Christian longer than a week, you've probably experienced some spiritual abuse. So the guest list could be unending here. But Matt and I had talked, in fact, last time he was in New Orleans about some of the... things that Michael Knott had written about in his Great Prophet album, which is fantastic. It's a Lifesavers Underground album. There was definitely some spiritual abuse going on there. And I think I actually, sometimes spiritual abuse all blends together for me, but I think some of the things that I talked about last time had some of those Kansas City Prophet guys involved in some of the stuff that that I was talking about last time that kind of affected me personally. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we can take this in a million different directions. I know you have some interesting stories of your own, and you can share what you want. And I know I often think of this, I don't know why, and kind of laugh, but I know you, this isn't really spiritually abusive, but it's just kind of funny. But I remember you said you were visiting a church and they wouldn't let you and your wife sit together because you couldn't get tickets next to each other. Is that true?
No, that wasn't me. I think it was someone else.
That wasn't you. I wonder who that was. There was somebody telling me they visited a church. I was pretty sure it was in Texas, and there were tickets handed out, and so they couldn't sit with their spouse because they didn't have – all they had was, like, single tickets left. So.
Oh, no, yeah, I know what you're I do know what you're talking about. When we were visiting a church, there wasn't tickets. There were just people at the door.
Oh.
They were helping people sit, right? Yeah, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. That was just weird. And so they were, I don't remember the specifics of how the place was laid out or whatever, but they said, okay, well, we only have like single seats left here and there, and we can have your wife and you sit in different places. I was like, well, we're kind of visiting this church and we want to, you know, sit together. And so we just kind of passed.
That's crazy.
It was a very weird experience.
Yeah, divide and conquer thing going on there. Maybe they thought they'd get double the offering or something if they, if you didn't know what the left hand was doing, you know, that kind of thing. So we won't consider that spiritual abuse. That's just a little odd. And I just kind of always chuckle at that story. But anyway, What spiritual abuse have you experienced, either personally that you want to talk about, or that you've seen out there that other people have fallen into, or maybe you still think they are falling into? I mean, you mentioned that you were looking for a church. A lot of people aren't even doing that anymore, right? They're just out of the whole thing completely because they don't feel like jumping back into a manipulative situation.
Yeah, I can't say I don't blame them. You know, I think that some people get so wrapped up in their church and kind of the cheerleading aspect of, yay, our church, you know, that they don't see why people would make that choice to leave other than it's their sin. I think that's, that's definitely one of the things that I've seen is that constant pushing back the problems onto the people that have them. The constant victim blaming, you know, you can't get rid of this sin because you don't want to, brother. You know, I don't know if you've ever been through that one, where it's like, they'll come up with this list of things that that you can't do. And then, you know, if you, disagree with them on it, and then your life doesn't change, then it's all back on you because you didn't want it enough, right? I don't know if you've ever been through that one where you told you didn't want it enough, but...
I was actually told, to take it a little bit further, we were taught that the evidence of that... so the move to almost perfection or whatever, the move to... you know, some sort of really deep level of sanctification and complete surrender to God, which would include, of course, getting rid of those sins, was speaking in tongues. So that was the evidence that you knew that you had completely surrendered to God and you got rid of those sins that you had was by speaking in tongues. So there was an external manifestation. So if we were in church and you were speaking in tongues and I wasn't, well, then, of course, we knew, oh, Matt got rid of all of his sins and Mike did, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, that was definitely a thing.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been like in an Assembly of God or, you know, a really outright charismatic denomination. So, yeah, I've kind of forgotten about all the way I've blocked it out. Maybe, you know, I've just kind of selectively pushed it back in my memory, all the different things of the gifts of the Spirit. That was also the word from the Lord that they come up to you. You know, brother, I got a word from the Lord. And you need to deal with that sin in your life. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? I remember even one guy, I was sitting there, I just had like my arms crossed or something, and he's like, you were just rebellious to the Spirit mm-hmm. because your arms are crossed. And I was just like, what? My arms are tired, dude. I'm just trying to rest and hear what you're saying. I'm trying to think of like specific stories too. One of the churches I went to, you can find like people blogging about all the bad experiences that happened at that church. It's quite a large church, and they've gotten a lot of attention recently because of that Fixer Upper show in Waco. I don't know if you're into all those HGTV, the Fixer Upper couple.
Oh yeah, I know who they are.
I used to go to their church. I never knew them, but I went to their church, and that church has been in a lot of hot water for several different things through the years, and. If you go out there, you know, there's people that have dedicated entire blogs to kind of chronicling the things that happened to them at that church. Let's see. I'm trying to think of like, like a specific category or I'm not even sure how you categorize this stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's so hidden. In biblical text and in you know, it's very sneaky. It's hard to kind of nail some of this down because when I was, manipulating Bob Kuhn last time, I just read Bible texts. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to do, right? So what one person can use the same text in a totally different way and completely manipulate somebody else and somebody else can use it correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's the, I keep thinking of this one weird story where I was meeting with this guy, and this is back in, I think 2000, 2001. So we're we're having this conversation, and he kind of goes off on how he's just tired of people, you know, getting internet pornography. And he's like, you know, it would just be so easy if people would just delete the blue E. They just delete that blue E off their computer. He was referring to the Internet Explorer. And at the time, I was like, you know, dude, there's this lawsuit against Microsoft Office, against Microsoft, because they made it to where you can't. If you remember that way back then, they made it to where you can't delete that Internet Explorer off their computers there for a while. I was like, and there's other ways to get on the internet. He's just like, you are just, he's like laid into me. He's like, you are just such this rebellious, you know, problematic person. You just want to disagree with everything. I was like, you know, dude, you're kind of offering this weird solution for people's stuff. And it's like, you know, that's all I was saying, you know, but he just got so mad. This is kind of a guy that he always seemed to have a thing out. That against me, it was weird, but anyway.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. So I don't know if you're familiar, and I don't want to go down this road necessarily on this show, but have you looked at any Dr. Jordan Peterson material?
You know, I've been hearing a lot about him recently, and it's generally not a positive thing from what I remember.
Yeah, so
look at it a little bit.
Yeah, so his psychoanalysis of the Bible series is phenomenal. I think the one thing about him where I think there's a lot of clips of him with clickbait titles. And I'll tell you this: I thought that he and Bill Maher were going to fight with each other the other day, but they didn't. Bill Maher is a huge fan, apparently, of Jordan Peterson. What Jordan Peterson is against, and I guess his particular area of study was communism, was ideologies and ideologues. And what he said, which you reminded me of, was that when you have someone like that, who's an ideologue, you know, a pastor or whatever, he said there's only, you got two options. You can either capitulate or you can fight. They don't give you any other option. The idea of conversation is non-existent. And little sentence, I was like, oh my God, that's so true. You know, we've all run into those situations where someone says, there's a school of, and I'm going down all these roads that I don't want people to, you know, whatever. But there's a school of young earth creationists that say, if you don't believe Genesis 1 is literal, then you have to throw out the entire Bible. And there's some of them that to say your salvation seems to be based on your understanding and your acceptance of a literal translation of Genesis 1. So the ideology there is, this is it. It has to be interpreted the exact same way that I'm interpreting right now. I have to take my modern scientific ideas and import them onto the exegesis of this text and understanding of this text, and there's no other way you can understand it. What do you do at that point? You can't have a conversation. So you either say, okay, yeah, whatever, or you fight the people, but they're not opening, or there's no door open to have any sort of conversation, because they've already made that impossible to do. So that's the problem. That's why you're a troublemaker. Because there's no option there.
Yeah.
There's no option of, you know what, you know, let's go sit around and talk about this. Oh, okay, I can understand where you're coming. They don't think that way. So you're dealing with some sort of, you know, ideologue and some strange ideologies. But I'm the same way when I grew up in church. Yeah, okay, well, there's nobody wants to have a conversation about it. And it's still the same way. You know, you bring up some sort of interesting conversation point, and people just lose their mind. I'll give you another example, since you live in Texas. But the very conservative Dallas Dallas Theological Seminary, right? So that's Chuck Swindoll. So they're very conservative. And if I'm misstating anything, I apologize. But I was really blown away by this on some level and interested in it because I like studying the Bible. But one of their faculty members, and I believe he claimed that this was a common belief inside of the seminary is that the Gospels are not written, of course, like a modern history that we would write, right? This isn't, one of us writing a history, that the Gospels seem to be more written like first century biographies, and they use, I think, Plutarch as an example. And in biographies, mm-hmm. things weren't necessarily, as we count them, historically true. And I hear people's brains exploding all over the place. So the Sermon on the Mount yeah. maybe necessarily wasn't, it was a collection, maybe it was a collection of sermons that was on, given in different places, and then the setting in the book was on the Mount. Well, that freaks fundamentalists out, because no, Jesus had it's mm-hmm. just like he said, whatever. But one thing that, I've had an interesting discussion with an ideologue about was the idea that Jesus's last words weren't literally his last words. And in first century mm-hmm. biographies, you could paraphrase. And so it seemed to me, and once right. again, I don't want to misrepresent anyone here, but it seems to me what this professor was saying was Jesus's last word probably was, "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit." But in John, he says, "It is finished." And so that's interesting, because I see people now say, no, "it is finished" meant it was finished. And therefore, Jesus could have got off the cross, and that would have been the end of it. It would have just been, whoa, that kind of sucked, but everything's paid for at that point. That contradicts every other idea of atonement in the Bible. Jesus died for our sins. Jesus didn't suffer on a cross for our sins and then was able to get off. But when you interpret the text as an ideologue and as some person who has a bizarre idea that Jesus wrote the Bible in our time for our time period to understand with our scientific modern or postmodern minds is really impossible. But you can't even have this conversation. I would have already been burnt at the stake in most fundamentalist churches for even getting, that sentence that started mm-hmm. this conversation. So that's a frustrating thing. And then things break off, and you have all these, subgroups, and people are trying to start, house churches, or people are trying to start their own churches or whatever, which then, of course, without any hierarchy, without any tradition, leads to all sorts of other forms of spiritual manipulation. So I understand why people get frustrated. And to that end, this has been eye-opening for me. People, if they're just tuning in and they've listened this far, Matt is one of the founders of not only the podcast, but Down the Line magazine, which is a magazine focused on music that people of faith, it's hard to define even what it is, produced during a time yeah. where that wasn't readily accepted in the Christian world. Some really great stuff in the 80s and 90s, even in the 70s, and then some still going on today. But there's a large percentage of our readers and a large percentage of the people that you cover, that we cover in the magazine, that have just totally thrown their faith out as well, unfortunately. And that was eye-opening for me. How did these conversations and these things evolve? That's a bad word, right? As the magazine started, did you run into any people who were like, hey, yeah, I was a Christian musician, but I don't even want to be associated with a Christian magazine now because of all the spiritual abuse that I've experienced?
Oh yeah, I mean it's especially in the first few years. There was Steve would probably remember more of that. Steve Ruff, the other guy that started with me, he was doing a lot more of the interviewing, and he was, I can't remember the names of people now, but it was just like there's so many people. It's just like, no, we're not going to have an interview with a Christian magazine. Like, well, we're not really trying to present ourselves as a Christian magazine. We're a magazine for anyone, but that might be interested in this stuff, maybe because they're past, maybe because they just discovered it, maybe just because they're into, obscure weird music and they stumbled on this, whatever, And I mean, it was, sometimes it was just really hard to just find some people who would do an interview, period, because they were done with the church. They were done with the scene. They were done with people of faith, And you'll have people like Ojo Taylor, who's, atheist now, but he'll still dialogue with people, right? But I mean, then there were just people that were just like, no, I'm not even dialoguing. And we're like, seriously, we're okay if you're not a Christian anymore. We're not trying to like secretly win you back, right? You know, that's the thing. There's so many people out there in the church that have their agendas with everything, right? If you show up at a church and you want to visit a church, they'll be friendly with you and hang out with you as long as they think that you're going to join the church. But then once that you decide you're not going to join the church, then all of a sudden they're gone, right? And any connection you have with them, they're gone, right? Or they run into you, they think you're a Christian, or you're not a Christian anymore, or you used to be, you're not anymore, and so they hang out with you as long as they think that they can turn you into a good testimony someday of you coming back to the faith, right? And these are all forms of spiritual abuse that we see, not just even in the leaders, but in the members of the church. And so, you know, it gets to be hard sometimes interfacing with some people that have been through that, no matter what your motives really are, right? Because I you know, frequently tell people I am not, you know, the magazine, we are not the Christian police, right? We are not trying to judge if you are the right type of Christian, if you are or aren't a Christian. You know, all we're saying is making music or art or writing books or whatever that are of interest to us. Because of, you know, we had this connection with this Christian music scene at one time in the past, you know, and so if you have some kind of connection to that and you're doing something of interest, then, you know, we want to talk with you. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's been so many people that just don't even want to interface with us. They're like, nah, you know. Well, and, you know, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to keep rambling on the same point.
Well, I mean, I would say that on some level, like I did, you know, praise and worship music for a long time. And I'm sure these guys feel kind of duped too on some level. Like, oh my God, I was embarrassing. I can't believe that I was a part of the manipulation as well. Not only a victim of it, but, you know, a tool of it too. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure a lot of these guys feel the same way. So one thing that I really like about the magazine is there is a level of dialogue. Sometimes though, you know, there are, again, you can't argue with, you know, people's ideologues on either side. So, mm-hmm. you know, I put militant atheists on the same, level of, you know, fundamentalism as, you know, the ultra conservative guys or whatever, but there is some level of dialogue that I think the magazine had, particularly in the special issue on homosexuality. So tell us how that one came mm-hmm. up and why you thought it was important and what kind of kickback did you get from that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, I think Steve got a lot more of the kickback on that one than I did, but we both got it pretty equally well. That was initially Steve's idea to do that because we looked at there's, you know, several of these Christian musicians, and not just the ones we interviewed, but also those like Jennifer Knapp and others that have, you know, however you want to describe it, come out of the closet or, you know, are no longer, you know, hiding their sexuality anymore, that were part of the scene. And so the original, so, you know, Steve was interviewing these different people, Sean Doty of Veil of Ashes, Doug Pinnock of King's X, and Rick Alba of Altar Boys and his own solo work, of course. And, or actually, all three of them have done solo work, so, and it's all really good music. And so the original title that was actually suggested to us from Rick Alba was God the Father and His Gay Children. But when we first looked at that, we're like, well, not everyone in this interview completely considers themselves to be a Christian. So we didn't really want to put that, you know, title on to you know, someone who was not a believer, you know, or didn't believe in God anymore. So we went with God, homosexuality, and the Christian church or something like that. And so the idea was just for them to tell their stories, right? And so Steve did a really good job interviewing them, getting to tell stories, and a lot of just really heartbreaking stuff, the amount of abuse that they went through from the church and from people at the church, from leaders at the church that tried to force them to convert from, you know, being gay, you know, conversion therapy was not only it was bigger back then, but it's still around today, unfortunately. And so that was basically it. And we didn't really want to, and you know, this came out in, what, 2008, 2009. So the conversation has even radically changed since then in a lot of circles. But we didn't necessarily want to have it be this big in-your-face thing of saying, you've got to become, you know, a liberal on this issue. We're just saying, here's the stories, we want you to listen to them, you know, not passing judgment either way, really. And so that was basically the idea behind that. And I think that it helped to kind of start bringing together, I guess, people that were more, I guess the best term for it, I hate to say liberal on a topic, but that's kind of more of a, you know, progressive stance, I guess, on that topic. Justin Lee and the Gay Christian Network kind of refer to that as the Side A Christians who believe in inclusion of LGBTQA community into the church. And so I think that there's a lot of people within the music scene that actually started identifying that, oh, hey, we actually all have kind of the same beliefs on this. And I know that I made a lot of friends on Facebook as well, the F-that issue, as well as lots of you. But and we also considered going back, and we may hopefully we'll still do it someday, and actually do interviews specific to people that still consider themselves Christians and gay, or Christian, lesbian, Christian, transgender, and actually use Rick Alba's title and suggestion, because I still like him a lot, of God the Father and his gay children. But so we may still do that. But, you know, and that was, that's, unfortunately, that's an argument that still continues to this day, though. I don't know. And hopefully we change some minds in some people, but just, I mean, just this week, I got drug into another Facebook argument over Jimmy Carter. Sorry, I was blanking on his name. Jimmy Carter made a quote about being accepting of homosexuality in the church, and people just bring out the same old things. It's, you know, the definition of marriage hasn't changed since God put it down thousands of years ago. And you guys are just trying to live in sin, and you should just, you know, you can't be faithful to scripture, so you should just get out of church if you're going to believe this. You know, it's just the same old argument points. I was like, wow, that's, you really think that marriage and the definition of marriage hasn't changed in thousands of years? You know, you really think that society hasn't changed views on this stuff? You really, anyway, it's a whole mess of issues within that, that whole area.
Yeah, I think, you know, even the Gay Christian Network allows people who are gay Christians to have, there's even inside, from what I understand, there are celibate gay Christians that are allowed, you know, that fellowship with these other guys that believe for them that they need to remain celibate, and that having a same-sex relationship is not God's will for them. There's from what I understand, from what I've read, there seems to be a wide variety of you know, gay people involved in this that are Christians. So there are gay people that feel that way. I guess the thing that kind of scares me in the church is I don't see that the conservative church is allowing necessarily people to do that. It seems with the conversion therapy. And, I mean, I've heard some just really horrible stories of, you know, making people watch porn, straight porn, and learning how to spit and whatever to get them to change their orientation. I mean, Exodus doesn't exist anymore, right? Isn't they just felt like it didn't work? Isn't that the story behind why they just dissolved it?
Yeah. It's never really been proven to work the way they thought it would. I mean, obviously, there's lots of people out there that, you know, tell you, no, it never did work. But they finally figured out that it wasn't working the way they thought it did.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. Here's my question, Doctor. The thing that bothered me in that, and I'm just sticking with that one extreme, if you buy the idea, and this is all theoretical, right, coming from a far-right conservative Christian perspective, but if you buy the idea that you were Adam and Eve were created, you know, very good, that their mind, their brain desired something, their body desired something else, their chromosomes all lined up correctly. So from the conservative Christian perspective, there was a lot of things inside of them that worked together. So their mind craved the opposite sex, you know, Adam craved Eve or whatever, and he got excited and, you know, they did their thing. Today in the conservative Christian circles, we say, you know, it's a fallen world. They say it's a fallen world and everything is subject to the fall. My question is, if there was, according to them, a consistency between chromosomes, between amount of estrogen, amount of, good Lord, I'm getting old. Estrogen and,
testosterone?
Yeah, there you go. That's not a word I need to forget, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what your brain desires, your body parts or whatever, why do the conservative Christians always try to change a homosexual's brain, right? So theoretically, what if you were born subject to the fall, and let's just do a duality here. Your brain desires what, let's say I have a penis, but my brain desires men. But the conservative Christians admit that your entire body is subject to the fall. Why do they always try to change the mind and not the body? Why is the body not subject to the fall? Why couldn't it be a sex change operation versus some sort of mind change that they're trying to do?
Well, you're trying to make logic out of stuff that's more propaganda.
Yeah, I know. It just seems like when I got to that point, I was like, well, this is really inconsistent.
That's a lot of what I tried to point out to people. You know, like, I'm not trying to, you know, I don't try to change your minds, but you got to look at a couple of things here. You know, it's like you say, well, you know, the definition of marriage is in Genesis 2. Like, well, Genesis 2 doesn't contain a definition of anything. It contains a writer who is not claiming that they're writing down the words of God, just giving a reason why a man and woman would get married, right? Nowhere is this, for this reason they'll get married. Nowhere does it say, this is the definition of marriage, thus saith the Lord, you know. And then you've only got two people there, one man, one woman. So it's kind of like, well, of course if they're going to marry anyone, it's got to be each other, you know. It's kind of weird, you know, for Adam, it would have been very awkward for Adam to say, sorry, Eve, I'm not attracted to you. You know, that would have been a really big mistake on God's part. You know, there's all these inconsistencies. But when you start talking about the biology, too, if you think about it, you know, we're talking within the assumption that, you know, it's all literal, right? And so, you know, if someone disagrees with that, of course, that's a whole other conversation. But, you know, it's the whole thing about genetics, you know, you think about it, you've got Adam and Eve there. You've only got at most two eye colors, two hair colors, you know, two personality types. But you look at the world today, we've got all kinds of, you know, different hair colors, different eye colors. Our biology has diverged a lot since then, right? But you're going to say that happened in the genes only for eye color or skin color or personality, you know, whatever types, but not for their sexuality, right? Not for who they're attracted to, or even for the male and female genes, right? Doesn't just make a whole lot of sense biologically, you know. That's, you know, again, trying to make logical sense out of this very abstract idea. But anyway.
Right. And just to be clear, because I try to word what I say kind of carefully, but I, you know, I'm not, I hope I haven't weighed in on any of this. I haven't tried to, you know, put my own opinions out here. I'm just continuing a dialogue, and I think that's the only way that we can, you know, because I probably sit on the more conservative side of things. It depends on who you're talking to, I guess. But to me, I might not be right, right? In order for me to test things, I have to engage in a conversation in a loving Christ-like manner. And by doing that, I've I've seen all kinds of other views that I had already, you know, maybe thought I understood or thought I knew, and I hadn't. And you know, the homosexual thing, I'll throw another wrench in there too, because I was recently having a conversation. I had this conversation about three times in about a 2 month period, I guess, with male homosexuals. And we were talking, and you know, once we got to know each other a little bit more, the conversation got deeper. They all three were Christians at one point. I'd assume they maybe still are. Maybe they just, what they rejected as from Christianity, I would say they misidentified, or they were taught incorrectly, right? So they weren't really rejecting God. They were rejecting who they thought God was. And again, if you're being taught who God is by an ideologue, then it's, you know, you're taught one way. Well, I don't like that guy. That guy sucks. So I'm out of here. You know, that kind of thing. But to a person, they all said, you know, I don't think I would be gay if I wasn't molested when I was younger. And that was interesting, because that puts a whole new spin on it, right? This is a very complex issue. And this is why it involves conversations with people. Because, you know, when we make black and white statements or whatever, we need to make sure that we're not, let's just say, and I'm probably digging in a little bit too deep here than I need to, but if there are people out there that are like that, that feels like maybe their sexuality has been oriented a certain way because of a past horrible event that had happened to them, then we could be doing them a disservice if we're just raising the flag and saying, yes, we accept every, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't want to dig any deeper than that. I'm already feel like I've gone too far, but my point is there's a conversation that needs to happen continually all the time. None of this is fixed. None of this is closed. And there's lots of variables, and there's brothers and sisters in Christ that we got to make sure that we treat as brothers and sisters in Christ who are hurting and who are trying to figure things out as well. And I feel like when we make these broad stands on maybe on any side, the left and the right, if you want to divvy it up that way, that we might be doing the people a disservice. Whew. Did I step into too much on that? Do I need to edit any of that out? Or
yeah,
you don't care. I'll be getting the emails, right?
Yeah, sure.
Just send it all to me. But I mean, tell me if I'm wrong on any of that. I mean,
well, yeah, there's. I know Doug Pinnock of King's X, that was his stance, at least in the beginning. I haven't checked back recently to see what he still believes in that, but his belief was that he became gay because he was molested as a child. And it's a complex topic. And I think there's a lot in the church that does try to flatten it out to one solution, right? And that's what my church back in Waco, they used to go to the Fixer Upper Stars, their church. They got all hot water from, because people dug up some statements that the pastor there had said about gay people. And it was found out that church has recommended people for conversion therapy. And I don't know if they still do, but they were doing it fairly recently. And I mean, I know people who were put into gay conversion therapy by that church. And so that kind of stuff is, and this is stuff where it's like, I mean, you talk about they make people watch pornography. This is stuff where I've had people tell me that they were stuck in a room where they put a whole room full of naked men together and have them do shoulder rubs each other. Their thought was that they would see that they would somehow get disgusted with this because there was obviously no romantic feelings there, right? They had, this is all total misunderstanding of what it means to be homosexual, of course, but, and then they would become disgusted and they would become gay from that experience, right? And so, but that's just the whole thing. And that's what you find with a lot of these, conversion therapy type of people, right? Like I said, there's a much more complex conversation there with lots of different reasons, lots of things going on, lots of different voices. but they will latch on to one person who maybe actually really was gay and became straight, because we know from the science community will tell you that people's sexuality often can be, well, not often, but it can be at times fluid, right, during their lifetime. People, but they don't know how to explain it, right? But I think that a lot of these conversion therapy places, they just get a movement going around maybe one of those people, right? And they think, well, that's got to be the same for everyone else. They change so everyone else can change, right? And it usually turns out that those people don't change, right? They're just kind of lying to themselves, and they were still gay all along. But, you know, so it's because we have to have this one answer, and it has to be a certain answer, right? And that is that you're gay by choice, and we can make you change that, right? And it causes a lot of damage to people. I mean, I've talked personally with people who've been damaged by it, and it sounds like you have too. So, you know, I agree with you though. There's got to be room for much messier conversations that aren't always so easy to tie up into easy answers.
And that's, you hit the nail on the head right there. I mean, people, like, I enjoy having messy conversations. That's why I've, you know, tried to talk with these people. I wasn't just fishing for information. I was trying to establish a relationship with these guys, especially when they heard, you know, that I was, a church worker. They would kind of talk to me, well, hey, you know, I used to go to church, but, you know, that kind of thing. I wasn't doing what you had said before, the friendship evangelism, just for the sake of trying to, you know. Because if you win a lost person, I think it's 2 points. If you get somebody to come back who's been away, it's 3 points. If you convert a homosexual, that's like 100 points. Bonus, you know, the whole bit. No, I'm just kidding. So
yeah, if it's a homosexual atheist, man, that's like 1,000.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, she can retire at that point. They give you a badge, and the crown you'll get in heaven will be amazing. But... it is messy. I mean, life is messy, you know, and, you know, I guess the problem is that people, they're scared, first of all, but they don't want to have to deal with this messiness. And it's the same thing with abortion. And I won't open up that can of worms before we wrap this up, but, driving through Missouri, I was just so offended by, you know, all the signs that said, and let me get through the whole sentence before it, because it sounds kind of weird. But, you know, all the light, heart rate starts at 18 days, you know, all these things, abortion is murder. And I never saw one sign that had any compassion for the mother or the woman who had an abortion before. And it's the same thing. I finally saw one down here driving to work that the Catholics had up. That said, love the babies, and then just as equal, same size, it said love their mothers. And I was like, all right, at least this has some compassion to the mothers, but it's the same kind of issue. You get on your ideological high horse, and you totally forget the people whose lives are actually being impacted by these issues. And the church isn't willing to, you know, to get out there and do anything about it. But anyway, we got to do this again, but we're 3 minutes over time. I try to keep these things at 40 minutes. And again, hopefully I didn't say anything offensive to anyone. And if I did, then I'm more than willing to be corrected, and I'm more than willing to have the conversation. Or if somebody disagrees with me, then, you know, please email Matt. And please call Matt at this number.
I was gonna say call Mike if you feel offended. That was my line.
Hey, well, no, that's fine. I'll take it. You know, I'm open to correction, and I'm definitely open to having the conversation, because, like we said, that's the most important thing. So I'll have you on again soon, and then you can, since you're a doctor and a scientist, you can tell us how we can prove the Earth is only 6,000 years old. Does that sound like a good one for the next topic?
Sure. Yeah, we got to talk about how it's flat too.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
All right.
All right.